saving. And that's critical when we're trying to service all the clients that we're bringing on board and ensure that the planners can do the job that they are there to do, which is go out and see the clients and spend time with the clients. We're looking at similar sort of capturing the meetings, transcribing the meetings, getting that straight across over to the power planners so that the power planners can do the extra work that they need to do from a research point of view. But it's got the potential to take quite a lot of time out of that process. And also from a compliance, with my compliance head on, it helps to ensure that consistency and accuracy, which humans are always fallible to, you see differences, particularly when you're bringing in different firms where we are centralized. So when a firm joins us, they join us on the basis that they do things the way that Attivo do them. But obviously, when you're bringing in a new firm and it takes time for people to get up to speed, controlling consistency and making sure that a client in the north of England gets the same experience as a client in the south of England when they deal with Attivo, that's quite difficult to manage unless you have something that can apply a level of consistent checking over it. So we're using the tool to check everything we do at a level to make sure the files are complete, make sure that if we've done an annual review, we've delivered everything that we need to deliver.
So
It gives them some
if I may,
reassurance.
just to clarify for a few people, correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding of that product is it will listen to a whole conversation, and I'm going to make some observations about differences in mark approach to this in the UK and internationally in a moment, but just RecordShore actually listens out for certain words and phrases in a whole meeting and highlights those so that you can focus on them from a regulatory perspective, positive or negative. We just had a question come up about data security, which we're going to come on to in a minute, and I would really appreciate it if everyone could answer that question as well. It's such an important issue in the context of AI. But so, Claire, the reason I bring that up, last month I was in the US both for the Advise AI conference that was organized by Financial Planning and for Fearless Investing, which Nitrogen host. Really interesting difference between the UK and the US. Predominantly advisors in the US, very, very reluctant. And if anybody is on from the US and they disagree with me, do please join and make that observation. But observation from both advisors and vendors in the US that they wouldn't want to record a whole call, whereas I know in the UK advisors generally are really seeing that as a major benefit. Could you expand a bit more on why you see that as a major benefit?
From my point of view, I mean, it's slightly different in the UK for us, I think, because there's a regulator compulsion to a degree to record meetings and have the records there. There has been, I think, I've been in the industry quite a long time now, and I think there used to be that similar reluctance to record calls within our industry in the UK. And I think first of all, it's experience that advisors are more used to having calls recorded, and they're more experienced with it, and it isn't coming back to bite them the way that they perhaps feared it would a few years ago. Purely from a compliance point of view, it makes our lives so much easier. It makes it easier to defend complaints. It makes it easier to evidence consumer duty requirements and things like that. If you've got the records there, it's much, much easier to see what conversation was had in the meeting. I think it expands a bit further than that as well to things like training and competency. I think if we can see what's happening in a client meeting and what conversations are being had and the difficulties sometimes that advisors have with clients and how clients respond to matters that come up in the meeting, we can adapt our training and competency and our training and development to respond to that. I was an advisor. I was an advisor for 8 years before I jumped the fence to compliance. And I know that what you see on paper and what you see in policy doesn't always happen when you sit in front of a client, because clients don't tend to behave how the policy suggests they should, because they're not rational very often. And I think having the recorded meeting actually provides reassurance. It also saves a lot of time. And nowadays, certainly the planners I work with, financial planners I work with, saving time is way more important to them than concern about whether they said the wrong thing in the meeting, to be honest.
One benefit I've seen from a firm, large advice business in the UK, who have been recording every call for over a decade, if they ever do get a complaint, they just, you know, 9 times out of 10, their chairman's told me, they just play the tape back, mm-hmm. and they're able to decide very quickly indeed did they didn't do something. And that's even without a tool like your own, Claire, it's not your tool, but without the one you're talking about, you actually can look at that. Go on, Claire.
I was going to say, we've been call recording for years anyway, so it's only a step further using the using RecordShore to transcribe the calls effectively. The thing that we've been looking for is actually something that could do it to the standard that we needed. So RecordShore's demonstrated so far quite high levels of accuracy, higher than we expected them to be, which we haven't been able to get previously, and that's really important.
I think it's fair if you actually look at their corporate customer base, pretty much half of the UK blue chip financial services companies are using them. They've got some very, very big names. I'd like to bring in Paul Miller for multiple reasons. We did have a comment a few minutes ago. I'm just scrolling back. Simon had said, Peter Sudlow had made an observation about, you know, will this drive us all to larger and larger firms? Actually, I think on the contrary, this can increase efficiencies for a lot of smaller firms. But Paul, you've had huge experience over the last 2 or 3 years, you know, bringing together a lot of small firms and moving them to consistent processes. Can you talk to us about that, and particularly talk to us about the data security and ethical issues?
Yeah, of course I can. I'll pick up a point that Claire just said first, if you don't mind, around the call recording. I think one of the big things from a data point of view is the ability to go back and look at what's called the metadata that's actually been recorded on there. It's what's been discussed, the context around it, the meaning around it. And that's the big step forward there has been natural language. The actual natural language processing that Ian mentioned right at the start has been the reason why a lot of these sort of call recording transcription services can understand accents like mine. You know what I mean? And that's a big plus, really. Let's face facts. From my point of view, obviously, I work for a large consolidator. We've got 30 odd firms under our estate. I've got north of 150 advisors, or I had north of 150 advisors a few months back when we were doing all the migrations. We've rolled out a single back office CRM. We've gone with IO just because of the fact that it was widely used across the estate, and it was you're pushing through an open door if people are already using a system that they're used to. We've rolled all that out from a point of view of a single set of processes, a single set of workflows. Those workflows were all built using data driven. What we worked out, what we wanted to see, what we wanted to capture, whether it's new business, attrition, ongoing service, and we've built the workflows from the back of that. So we now know we're capturing the right amount of information right at the start. It was interesting last week. We had an in-system client off the back, not last week, a couple of weeks back, with the pensions. So obviously we made sure that was picked up correctly in the workflow. So obviously that's a workflow tweak we've done now. I think that's pretty much our first one since we built this since March, which is quite weird. I thought it would have already been there. And what we're using AI for is very much, we're at the early stages, but we're trying to bring people on the journey, right? We're trying to make people not scared of AI. Now, I'm in the middle of the new FCA report, which came out today. And a couple of things sort of struck me is the fact that the AI in financial services, 75% of firms now are using AI, right? Which, first of all, was quite surprising. And then when you read that only 34% of the firms understand the AI that they're using, on the face of it, that looks really scary. You're thinking they're using something that they don't understand. But on the, you turn that around from my point of view, in the fact that that means I've got 34% of people that are willing to use something. They're open-minded. They're having a go, essentially. And as long as you're careful and you're not putting client details on there, I think you're fine, which is the tack that we're taking with IWP. We're trying to get people to be open with usage rather than using it on mobile phones, taking photographs of client records and having them stored in mobiles and using mobile apps instead of the apps that we want them to use. And I think that that is having benefits, because it's meaning that people now are a little bit more open to change, a little bit more open to trying things out, a little bit less scared. And they're also quite open to the fact that they can come and just ask us, you know. And I think it means an awful lot when someone sends you a message and sort of says, yeah, there's a tool I want to try. How does it look? And when you look at that tool and you find out they're not, you know, GDPR compliant, they're not in the UK, they're sort of like almost like they've not got 2FA and they're sending unencrypted data out. At least you can warn people about that instead of them going off on tangent behind the scenes on a mobile phone or something and using something that, let's face it, is just dangerous. So that's the tactic that we've sort of taken over the last few months.
And again, you know, a recurring theme has been time saved. You know, how would you quantify the level of time saving? Obviously, there's a huge amount of work getting ready for this. And we've been doing some research, which we're about to publish, on the extent to which advisors feel they've got clean data. And yeah, brings out some quite interesting differences depending on who their underlying tech suppliers are as well. But can you talk to us a bit about the amount of time you then needed to spend getting ready, how particularly how that has changed? Because you know, when you and I have talked before, you know, you've stressed it was quite a hill to climb initially. But now when you're bringing firms on board, and indeed you said to me it would significantly influence which firms you would now buy.
Massively. We've gone out and we've bought firms in the past before I arrived. I can say that hand on heart, and that's the truth, without really any due diligence from a tech stack. So we've ended up with firms that have got bits of old kit sitting there with, you know, Windows NT, which is like 25 years old now, sitting in a corner, which turns out that it's running a mail server, which scares the life out of you, really, because there's client emails on there. They're unencrypted. They're unpassword protected. So we've gone down that particular route and found that bits of kit that are out there, they shouldn't really be out there. So what we've actually done is we've integrated those firms. They're on one tech stack now, right? They're still using their own preferred tools at the moment, and I want to try and get that down a little bit. But at the same time, if someone wants to use CashCalc versus Voyant versus Dynamic Planner, there's no real issue at the moment, so long as they give you the right results and compliance are happy with the tool, right? I would like to get that down as a choice of one or two, ideally one, obviously, but, you know, we'll see. The work that we've gone through with the actual sort of migrations, it has been a massive, massive task. You know, we had 33 firms over 23 different IO tenants, and we've now got one IO tenant. And that has taken us probably 15 months to get to that stage. And the big benefit for that now is, if I want to now know what my new business was, you know, this month, I can see it straight away. We take information now direct from IO automatically using Power Automate every night. So we get all the workflows out every single night. We get all the AUA out. We get all the valuations out, that those that are valued, every single night. So at each particular stage of a month, I can see how many new clients we've got, how much new business we've driven, how much attrition we've got. And all of that means I just get a view of the business now that I've never had before. The challenges I've got now are spinning up the data team to be able to provide insights that all this data I've suddenly got hold of. So we've gone out and built an entire data warehouse in the center now. And that's having two benefits. One, we get a visual aspect to the data. We can see inside IO at any particular point. We can have a look at ongoing service now, and we can see that we've got some problems with ongoing service with clients that are inactive that should be active because they've got an active plan. So that sort of thing is showing you that insight straight away. And we're almost at a stage where we can bring in almost like a, for want of a better phrase, a data policeman. Someone brings in, essentially, they convert a client from a prospect to an active client. They get the plan on, the plan's in force, but the client service status is still prospect. Straight away now, I know that. I know that the very next day that they haven't changed that client service status. So I can have a look now. I've got those early warning indicators starting to come through. I think the second thing is the fact that it's my data. Yeah, that they're my clients, you know. I should have all of my data in one place. So I should have full access to all of my data. And, you know, IO, like it or not, if I want to move from IO, I shouldn't be waiting for IO to allow me a migration off. I've got all my data. I can move to somewhere else. It won't be easy, but the data extract straight away. And that is a massive win for me.
There. That's a really important thing. There's a question just popped up that I'd like to ask, particularly all the advisors to look at, that's talking about how you see the future of your ongoing advice service. But equally, Alex Lannan has come up with a really valuable question. I'd like to ask, perhaps starting with Simon, if I may, then come to Claire and back to Paul. How do you approach due diligence on these tools? What are you doing? What due diligence processes have you put in place to make sure that you're absolutely comfortable about what you're using? Simon, can I start with you on that?
Yeah, so that was a big thing for one of our advisors, Katie. So first of all, we looked into all their sort of GDPR regulations, rules, asked for all that information at the start to see what they'll give you. We then sat down and had a virtual meeting with the CEO and also their head, like data security chap, to explain more detail. We then went to our compliance oversight company saying, we're going to integrate this. Can you help us do some due diligence on them? So they structured some stuff with us as well. And then finally, with IO, because we use Intelligent Office as well, and understanding the integration with them and speaking to our Intelligent Office representative, they'd also done their due diligence. And if I'm brutally honest, they're a lot bigger organization than we are. So that gave us another kind of thumbs up across the board. So I think you're right. You need to make sure you sit down, you look at everything that they've put together. And if they can't offer it you, don't go ahead with it. That's kind of how I'd go about it.
Claire, can I come to you with the same question?
Yeah, similar really. We started with the problem, as I said before. We started with what do we need to achieve? What are the criteria that we need to achieve? And I would say that if anybody's doing this exercise, that's the bit to start with, because there's a lot of tools out there now and they all do slightly different things, or they approach it from a slightly different direction. So you need to be quite clear about what you're wanting to achieve before you start your due diligence, so you don't go off on a tangent and end up with something that does lots of good stuff, but it's not quite the thing that you needed it to do in the first place. So I would say that's the big one for me, having a very clear problem statement at the start to understand exactly what it is you're trying to get out of the tool. And then similar stuff, we also use IO. So it's a reassurance that it needed to be something that integrated with IO. It needed to be something that we were comfortable with the data management and the data protection aspects of it. And it needed to be a firm that was able to grow with us as well. And I think that was probably for us as a growing firm was a big part of it, is the firm that's willing to grow and develop with us as we go along.
That's great. Just before I come to Paul, just another reminder to advisors. We have a question up on the screen. We've got quite a good response, but I think this is a really valuable one and one I want to take forward into a future session and how we help you all further in this. Anything you'd like to add on the due diligence side, Paul? I know you're very thorough on that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to reiterate the sort of the point that Claire's just made about the process, but it is about looking at what processes you've got and what bits and pieces you can take out of that and which tool is going to fit the bill. There are tens of thousands of tools out there now. I read a stat a few months back that said that and by the next year, there's going to be a 30% reduction in the number of tools out there due to vendors obviously just either failing because they can't get a customer base or whether they're going to be bought by other tools, essentially, sort of as they start to do a land grab. So, I mean, we focus very much. I know Simon mentioned PlannerPal. We had early conversations with PlannerPal. At the time, they hadn't got things like 2FA turned on. They hadn't got encryption at rest and encryption on APIs. They've now got all that, you know, which is why we have got them now as one of our test apps on one of our test beds. But the other thing very much is it's just data protection, making sure that the encryption is there, making sure the proper due diligence. They're vendors, you know. I used to see AI as a tool. I'm more leaning towards now. It's almost like having another employee. You know, you wouldn't take someone on without the proper DBS checks and verification of ID checks. So why would you take a tool on without making sure that they don't tick all the boxes and MFA and, you know, that things like password rules. I mean, you know, I dealt with a company a few weeks back that literally had a password rule, which was, yeah, you just got to have 6 digits and I can just have, you know, 123456. And then 3 days time, I change it to 123456 7 and then back again to 123456. It's little things like that scare you to death. Which is why when that question came up of your data protection, what does it keep you awake at night? Even though I feel like we're really, really good, still keeps me awake at night, because at the moment's drop, somebody can do something daft. Yeah. And just never take your eye off the ball from that point of view.
Interesting to see in the last 48 hours, an enormous, apparently there's a UK fintech that provides to something like 48 out of the top 50 banks, and they've been hacked, and it's basically been a large file message transfer against. It's a subject we'll probably return to in another occasion. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to do some background work on this, but particularly wider cybersecurity for advisors, and particularly validating, you know, your suppliers' cybersecurity processes. Simon, if we can generally move forward about, you know, what are you seeing as next? When we talked last week, Simon, you were quite excited, I think, about some of the things that are being done to enable you to automate your suitability letter generation. Would you like to share more of that and what you're actually seeing and the potential opportunity for time saving and improved operations that will give you?